When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Yeah, but sometimes I think that's the beauty of being friends with comics, is like you get you're inside your own forest, so you can't see the forest. Like I told a joke one time that I did not think was funny at all. We do this new material night at the store on Tuesday nights. Jeremiah Watkins runs it. It's one of my favorite shows to do. And in the back are Rogan and Segura. And I'm up on stage and they'll just call things out and you got to write a joke based on it, which I love. I'm better at that than I think I am at straight up stand-up comedy. But it's just free form. For me, it's just literally like a Rorschach test. Where you just, whatever you think, I'll tell you what I think. And this kid goes, take your shirt off. And so I would take my shirt off. And he goes, I said, what else? And he goes, Anne Frank. And then I go, oh, I used to think Anne Frank and Helen Keller were the same person. And he's like, and everyone starts laughing. I just thought everyone had mixed those two up. And I was like, oh, no, I did. And I said, I found that out at the Anne Frank house. They're not. And I told the story of me and my friends going like, and by the way, it's asinine to me that it's why I don't do observational comedy. The premise is that my friends had said, it was right after Russia. They're like, we should go to the Anne Frank house. And I was like, oh yeah, we'll get a bag of weed and laugh our dicks off. And they're like, what? I was like, I've been hearing jokes about this chick my whole life. We'll put a plunger in her toilet. And they're like, huh? I go, yeah, yeah. And they're like, I don't know if you can go into her bathroom, but you can see the closet they kept her in. I was like, oh, they kept her in a fucking closet? And they're like, yeah, the Nazis were looking for her. I go, the fucking Nazis were looking for her? I was like, how many times did this chick roll snake eyes? Can't see, can't hear, can't talk, locked in the closet. Nazis are looking for her. And then I was like, wait, how did the Nazis not find her? Banging around in the closet. I get off. By the way, people are laughing, but I'm oblivious to why they're laughing. I get off stage and Rogan's like, dude, that's a bit. And I went, no, I everything's new. And he goes, no, that is a bit. And I had taped it, luckily. I had taped it. And I went to Omaha the next week. And I'm telling you, when I started the thing, I literally was shocked anyone was laughing. But sometimes that is how it comes out.
But sometimes it's like, I think it's like there's no filter, right? You have like these kind of, you probably didn't realize you have these connections in the brain connecting Anne Frank to Helen Keller, and then just someone shouting out Anne Frank, and you had no filter. Like, a lot of times people would be nervous and freeze, yeah. You know? And I think you're just like, bleh. Like, it rolls into a joke because then it goes into your stand-up skills and you have these connections between Anne Frank and Helen Keller, which is an odd connection, and then you tell why. That's a joke.
I found out why, by the way. It's Anne Sullivan. I used to confuse Anne Sullivan and Anne Frank. Uh-huh. And I used to confuse Helen Keller with Anne Sullivan. Like, Anne Sullivan was I saw the Miracle Worker. And yeah. So Helen Keller wasn't the name that stuck out. For some reason, it was Anne Sullivan. So when I first heard about Anne Frank, I confused Anne Frank and Anne Sullivan and then just made that one person.
So there is a connect the dots, and whether or not you really confuse them, yeah. You still were able to kind of like connect those dots to act as if you confuse the two of them. Because I'm sure at some level, if you thought about it, you wouldn't confuse them.
I would have definitely, you know, it's like you hear those two stories at the same age. So it just melted in. But yeah, like there's a bit that I really don't find funny, but my wife is like, that's the funniest fucking story about, I have a rash on my cheek that I got from this Vietnamese kid. We were in Vietnam and this kid wanted, they don't have beards there. Like, men don't have beards. Vietnamese people just don't grow facial hair like that. So I came out of the jungle. We went to this village, and they thought I was a fucking werewolf. And so I scared the kids. They'd never seen a man with a beard, especially like a loud American man. And so I started giving them Skittles, and they were rubbing my beard. I'd give them a Skittle, and they wanted to rub my beard. And then every time they rub my beard, I go, and they would howl laughing, right? So this one kid has got this fucking dirty hand. And I'm like, oh, not him, not him. And then he does, rubs my beard and I growl. And I immediately, my face is itching. And I've had this rash on my fucking face for now probably like 2 years. And so I tell it, this is the part my wife finds funny. I show it to my mom. And my mom just goes, oh, honey, you have herpes. And I'm like, wait, what? I was like, that can't be your fucking solution, mom. And who gets herpes on their cheek? And my mom's like, oh, we all have herpes. We all have herpes. And I'm like, wait, what? And so, yeah, part of me is like, I don't know if my mom knows what herpes is, but but things like that where my wife, or like I said with the pajamas joke, with Adam Egan going, bro, that's the funniest joke. And I'm like, that's funny? Like, I think those are the times where you're, for me, and I think, once again, it goes back to like me in college. I was like, how can you be funny? I know I can be funny in the moment, but I don't know how to be funny on stage.
Well, you know how to be funny on stage. Yeah. Right? Like, but I think what happens is, and the reason why maybe you don't go into the 50-minute story is you're telling the story at a college party where everyone's, this is where you develop your skills. You're telling it at a college party where everyone's drunk. You have to get through the story in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Or else you lose your audience.
Yeah.
So it's not like everybody's sitting around a TV watching your special when you're 18 years old. You had to hurry up because you were afraid to be ignored.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That is, you nailed that. Well, you really like, I was supposed to do therapy today. I should have had my therapist Skype in with us so that he could have been like, I actually have a note on that.
Well, now we're going to get back to your dad though. That's the initial
tangent. Yeah. What was the dad thing? I cut you off.
You were saying you don't bring up your dad much or your parents much in jokes, but when you tell like the Will Smith story, so you're doing stand-up for only 6 months in New York and the remarkable happens, which is that you're so funny and Will Smith's production company is so appreciative of your stand-up comedy, they get you a development deal where you're pitching TV shows with Will Smith. He invites you to go to the movies and the whole story is like fascinating because it's kind of celebrity gossip. But then your dad's the comedian in the story, the way you tell it. Your dad's basically says, oh, he's going to try to be gay with you.
Yeah.
And then you say you're a homochondriac and describe what that is. So like your dad kind of actually is the impetus for a lot of the humor in some of these jokes that you tell. And you rely on him almost like that guy, Justin Halpern, who wrote the book Shit My Dad Says. It's like you rely on him to be your straight man almost.
Yeah, it's
what was it like growing up with him?
I don't know the right way to say this without sounding bad, but like he didn't like my personality. the part of me that people enjoy, my dad, it makes him very uncomfortable.
Like what did he do for a living?
He was a lawyer, still is a lawyer. Very humble. He's a very, very humble man. He never would brag. You'd never hear him brag about anything.
But he's stern with you.
He was a lot sterner with me than ever with my sisters. Yeah. Like he was very stern with me. He says, and I believe this, is that I remind him of his dad. And he lost his dad when he was 13. And so I think there's a part of him that was afraid to connect with me, maybe.
Or maybe he didn't want you to turn out like his dad.
Well, his dad died of a stroke when he was like 42. And I think he thought I was going to die of a stroke when I was 42. And by the way, I think Patrice died of a stroke when I was 42, or maybe 40. And it changed the way I went to a cardiologist. Because of Patrice's stroke, I went to a cardiologist. I got on blood pressure medicine. Once I got on blood pressure medicine, I started living more unhealthy because I was like, oh, we're taken care of. But he was a very, he didn't like to show off in me. It was a perfect example of me and my dad's relationship. When I was in first grade, I was playing second base for the Yankees in Pinto baseball, right? Denny Sullivan was my coach. Teddy Church was my first baseman. Jason Sullivan was a shortstop. And the bases were loaded. It was an evening game on like a Thursday. And a fly ball was hit to me and I caught it in the air. And I took the ball. I spiked it, I ripped my shirt off, and I started dancing. I'm in first grade, right? Now, I think
the
now-
seeds of greatness already there.
In, as a parent right now, I would pay money for that experience, to watch that. I would definitely pay money if it was my kid. My dad was humiliated. He was like, He's like, you don't fucking do that. Jesus Christ. He's like, you catch the ball and then you just, oh. And my mom loved it. My mom loved it. Denny Sullivan yelled out from the dugout, put some mustard on that hot dog. And everyone laughed even harder, right? I was oblivious. That was my natural personality. My natural personality was to spike the ball, take my shirt off, and start dancing. That was me. That's Bert. That is Bert. Like, that is who I am, is right in that kid.
But
right
so
there.
Let's say your dad was like, go Bert, right in that moment. How do you think it would have changed how you would have done it later, if at all?
I would have ended up being some fucking porn star, Instagram whore. Like, I don't know. I'm sure that you need that disapproval to become a well-rounded human being, or you just become obnoxious. Like, if I had lived my whole life spiking balls and ripping my shirts off, well, I mean, I guess I technically do half of that, but like, I'm sure you'd be Deion Sanders.
Well, but
I mean, by the way, I don't mean to slander Deion Sanders, but like, I remember when Deion Sanders came out, my dad was like, hated him. Just like, oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, can you believe this? Can you believe that prime time? Like, and then adversely, my dad, when Deion was playing two sports, my dad was like, man, he is an amazing athlete. Now, cut to Tiger Woods comes out. Immediately, like, there's all this showmanship behind him. Like he's like a flashy. And I assume my dad won't like that. And so my dad calls me. He's like, are you following this Tiger Woods thing? And I say what I think would appease him. And I say, yeah, but fucking, I'm not a fan. And my dad's like, oh, buddy, you're wrong. You're wrong. This kid is all talent. This kid is amazing. And the words he's speaking is going to, you'll see. What you got to watch is, and then he told me, he's like, you need to become a fan of his now so you can enjoy your life for the next 20 years. And I went, really? Like, you can never, it's my dad's one of those people, you can never, whatever he says to you, you can never figure out why he's, like, I've never
what
been able
he mean
to judge
by
that guy. Is that we're about to experience one of the greatest golfers ever to live. And if you get on board with him now, then you will enjoy the next 20 years of your life watching him play golf. But if you hate him today, then man, golf's going to suck for you forever. And it's so funny. I became a Tiger Woods fan that day. And I am a ride or die motherfucker for Tiger Woods. Like, I love that guy. I want success. I'm a fan. I had a guy come up to me one time in West Palm, and he goes, his shirt's off, doing a meet and greet. And he's like, I need 2 minutes of your time. And I went, and the bouncer's like, bro, you got to leave. And he's like, 2 minutes, Bert, 2 minutes. And I was like, sure. And he goes, okay, I'm a fan. Do you know what that means? And I was like, yeah, well, yeah, I get it. And he goes, no. When you succeed, I get happy. Like, when good things happen to you, that makes me happy because I'm on your team. And I was like, okay, because I don't think you're realizing what I say. Like, if you got a TV show, I would feel like I got a TV show. Do you know what that means? He goes, I got nothing in my life, man. All I do is I have you guys that I listen to on podcasts. And when good things happen to you, I feel like I joined the right team. He's like, I'm a fan. And immediately I went, I'm a fan of Tiger Woods. Like, when bad shit happened to Tiger, I got bummed out. When people talk shit about Tiger, it bothered me. And when I see him succeed, like this last championship where he was coming up at the... Dude, I'm getting chill bumps talking about it. Like, I got excited. I was in Target with my kids watching Tiger finish out his round on my phone going, yes! Like, that... And then I connected. I went, dude, I know exactly what you mean. And he goes, I'm a fan. And I was like, bro, I'm a fan of Joe Rogan's. I'm his friend. I'm a fan of Tom Segura's. I'm his friend. But when Tom succeeds, when Joe succeeds, when I heard Roseanne was going to do Joe's podcast on her first interview, I fucking was like, fuck it. Like, I got excited. And it's okay to be a fan of shit. Like, I like being a fan of shit. I'm a fan of Bill Burr's. When he goes on Conan the other night, I don't know if you saw it like a week ago, and murders, I cheer. I like I'm in my bed going, oh, God, way to get it. And then I run into him the other day, and I'm like, dude, you murdered on Conan. Like, I get the experience to be able to share with my heroes and the people I'm a fan of. I get to share with them in that experience, you know? And, like, I'm really lucky.
I mean, that's part of the benefit, too, of doing a podcast. But I get to call anybody up,
dude,
that I want. And I don't call up random people.
Yeah.
Everybody has to be someone that I want to talk to.
It's, dude, I love it. Well, I like Rob Riggle.
You do a great podcast.
Rob
you
Riggle.
Call up your friends.
I got Rob Riggle on my podcast. I think Rob Riggle was like, I don't know what the fuck this is going to be. And I was like, bro, like, I'm a fan. Like, you don't understand. Like, I'm a fan. I get to talk to you about your service in the military, which amazes me. Because I feel like we're the same guy, but I go, I would have never done that. Like, I would have never served in the military selflessly, and you did. I want to find out where we veer. And by the end of the podcast, I got to be dead honest with you. I think Rob Bowie was like, bro, that was a fun time. I was like, yeah, no shit. I'm a fan of yours. Like, yeah, it should have been fun. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Once again, I'm fucking my dad. I don't know. My dad, something with my dad.
Well, okay. We'll close off in a nifty way. Your dad. He didn't approve of you throwing the ball down.
Yeah.
You're still going to do that for the rest of your life, but you're just not going to do it arrogantly. You're going to do it thinking from all angles how people are looking at it, but you're still going to do it. You're going to take off your shirt, not because you're the most beautiful demigod in the world, but that's just who you are. But then you're going to worry about what people think, and that's where the humor is.
Yeah, I guess so.
So
I guess that formative moment, if we're going to put this in a nifty bow, is at that time when I spiked the ball and I was being my authentic self, and my dad self-corrected it just a tad bit. And he was like, yo, life will be unbearable if you are this arrogant asshole who dances every time he dances in front of people every time he succeeds.
Because you're clearly not arrogant. Like,
no,
your story
no.
about when you introduced yourself to the Russian mobsters, where you had this whole hello planned, and you were so nervous at the final second, all you said was, I'm the machine,
yeah,
in Russian. And, you know, it's because it's a mixture of the fearlessness you had there in first grade, but maybe they're going to disapprove.
I think
maybe they're going to kill me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that it's, I think there is a, I mean, what I was trying to say to them, honestly, was I'm the man, which is Yamashina, but I said Yamashinu, and it just means I'm a car. And so they were like, huh? And that's what made them laugh, is like, they don't have slang. So if a guy comes up and he's like, hey, I'm a car, you're like, what the fuck? And so it just made them laugh. And I just kept saying it louder and louder, not knowing what I was saying all night. And then Igor translated it for me. He's like, no, you're saying you're the machine. And I was like, oh, I thought I'm saying I'm the man. Like, I take a shot and go, I'm the man. And they were like, I'm the machine. And they just thought that was fucking hysterical. My dad, to this day, I'll tell a story. My dad goes, that didn't really happen, did it? And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, even the Will Smith story, my dad's like, I didn't say he was gay. Like, and I was like, no, you said it. And my dad's legit words were, he's going to queer you. That's what my dad said. He's going to queer you, buddy. And I went, with the Tracy Morgan story. Like, Tracy, but just to be fair to Tracy Morgan, has come out and said that story never happened. But okay, that's totally fine that he says that. Me and Tony Woods were there. Tony Woods and I both were there. It definitely happened. But I say this to my dad, and I say this to Tracy Morgan, if he ever hears this. Like, if I'm that good at just making up a story, I just write fiction. Like, what the fuck am I doing stand-up for? Like, if I had a talent that I knew that I could just craft a story that the Tracy Morgan story might be the best story I've ever
That's an amazing
told
story.
In my entire life. If I could, at what, 5 months of doing stand-up, if I knew that I could write that at 5 months of doing stand-up, bro, I'd be huge.
So first, I'm going to give a shout-out to, there's a clip of you telling that story superbly on the Joe Rogan show.
Yeah.
So people should just YouTube Joe Rogan, you, and Tracy Morgan. And it's a great version of that story. Plus, that story is in your book. Great story. And it's a punchline at the end. That's a boom at the end.
That was before I realized. I mean, like, it's just how the story happened, you know? That's just the story.
Hey, don't leave so fast. Before you go, don't forget to claim your free copy of my free ebook called Fact Me, where I share with you my answers to a range of questions on business, coming up with ideas, getting unstuck, Bitcoin, and more. Get your copy of my book at jamesaltucher.com/FAQ. That's jamesaltucher.com/FAQ.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.